Welcome to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Everybody, and welcome to the show. It's made possible by our friends at Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Today, we're joined by a winner and a man who has made people around him winners. Johnny Lewis is our greatest ever boxing trainer, a living legend of Australian sport who has guided six world champions, and some of them among the biggest names to have stepped in the ring. He's been bestowed the Order of Australia Medal and inducted into the Sport Australia and Boxing Halls of Fame. Johnny, welcome, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Sam.
Timing is funny at times, isn't it? A few days ago, one of your old protégés in Jeff Fenwick was in the news for a motivational video he sent to the Socceroos, Johnny. And in explaining it, Jeff said, looking back at his career, that he wanted to win more for you than for himself. Now, I imagine that's the ultimate accolade for a coach or a trainer, isn't it?
Oh, most certainly. You know, it was we're very close. I can still remember when we had his first world title attempt. I knocked it back a few times, but Morty was hounding me, and I asked him to get the last three fights that the Japanese opponent had. And anyhow, when I seen him, I thought, well, Jeff's up to this task. And I rang Bill and said, mate, put that fight on. And as they picked winners prior to the event, the only one person in the fight game that give us a chance was Jimmy Carruthers. And I remember I was in the dressing room with Jeff, and I said, Jeff, mate, they're going to hang me tomorrow if you don't win this. He said, they won't be hanging you. He said, I'm going to give it to him. And it was just a few little words that, you know, Jeff finished up. They stopped it in about the ninth round, I think.
As we go on today, Johnny, I'm really keen to get to tap into your philosophies and your strategies behind motivating elite sports people. I mean, what's the methodology really behind what Jeff's saying there? Is it about you showing the faith, knowing that that faith will be paid back?
Look, I always tried to be there. I didn't want them missing days and then still thinking they're going to fight. So the first thing was that I always had to be there every day. And the word discipline was the key to it all. Like, it wouldn't matter, like, one of them could have punched hard, one of them could have been faster of hand and foot, another one tough. But without discipline, none of them would have had success.
Mm.
But, we did that together. And I think a lot of trust too, you know, when you, like, I remember Jeff Harding, I knocked DeAndre's fight back on about three or four occasions, and then I got a call from a friend in America that told me that Andre's had took his foot off the accelerator, thinking that he wasn't going to get a fight. He said, mate, if I was you, I'd accept. And that was how we got that one, you know. But everything's about when and where, and how you are at that moment.
Johnny, yours is a journey in every sense. So let's go back to go forward, if you don't mind. A home was in Erskineville, an inner suburb of Sydney, for those unfamiliar. Your mum, Marge, your dad, Alfred. What was Erskineville like in the 50s as a kid?
Oh, great. You know, I'm still in Erskineville, and it is my home. I love it.
What sort of beginnings were they, John? I think I was reading you grew up in a commission flat there. Were these, as they say, humble beginnings? Were they occasionally tough times looking back, or you were pretty rough and ready as a kid?
The best way I can sound that out is the fact that when we were kids, we had nothing, but we had everything. Kids today have got everything, but they got nothing. And we were a mile in front. Yeah, if we got a bike, it was either someone pinched it for you or left it around or whatever. But we would never have had money to buy a bicycle. We couldn't even get footballs or cricket bats. You just fell along them on the way, you know. And when you've got good parents, it makes life easier, and the learning curves are always there. And you know, there's things that you learn that you could have done, but you knew it would break your mother's heart. The love of your parents molds a lot of things too.
Yeah, yeah. It is said in your biography with Paul Kent, Johnny, that you mixed with hustlers and hard men, but that you never met a bad bloke.
There's never been a bad bloke in Eskimo.
And did you have a paper round of sorts? Or what was your first, if I can classify that as a job, what was that, your first job?
When I was at school, I had a paper run, and I used to do the scoreboard at Erskineville Oval on weekends, and at half time, I had a big tray full of lollies, and I'd walk around the hill, and I used to yell out, "Sweets, chips, chocks, peanuts," and sell the lollies.
And I don't know if this is the case, but did you get out to the coaches' addresses at the quarter breaks from time to time to listen to them?
Oh, very much so, particularly in the AFL. At quarter time and three-quarter time, they'd stay out in the field, but at half time, they'd go inside like the rugby league coaches and that did. But, yeah, it was... I used to listen to them revving them up and getting up them. And I remember one old coach there, he played down Melbourne, I forget his name, but he was up here and he was certainly over 40, and he used to have a bottle of Plonk or something, and he'd take a couple of mouthfuls of that and then get up the team for like telling them bludges and pee hearts and everything. And, he was full as a goo, I can tell you.
I was going to ask you if you took much from those in later life. I'm tipping not if this was what you were witnessing. Hey, you mentioned school before, Johnny. Were you keen on it?
School?
Yeah.
I hated the first day, I hated the last, and I hated everyone between. I hated school.
You didn't hang around there for too long, did you?
No, I left at 14, yeah. My mother said if you pass the intermediate, you can leave. Otherwise, you got to do it next year. Well, I passed, and it was a great thing. But, you know, it was about 5 years later, I wish I was back at school. I wish I would have learned a bit more. And no regrets about anything, but never.
Yeah, yeah. So you're only 14 when you leave school, Johnny. How did you fill your days?
I went and got a job as a sign writer straight away.
And... I think you were at, might have been this place. Were you there for 3 decades or something, weren't you, working as a sign writer there?
Yeah, 32 years.
Oh, and was there an accident that you had as a young fella? I know we're going to get to your own sporting pursuits in a moment, and I'm not sure whether this ended that or not, but what happened as a teenager there? Did you have an accident on site?
Yeah, I had a fall off the ladder, and finished up. I was badly diagnosed. They used to give me dengue rub and crepe bandage, but 7 years later I was at the beach with a really good new now footballer called Bubsy Floyd, and a bloke that Bubsy knew from South saw me foot and he said, "Geez, what's wrong with that?" I told him, and through him, he steered me in. I finished up. I had it operated on and had a triple fusion in it. And the other leg, they manipulated that under anaesthetic. But, yeah, it left me a little bit sore and sorry.
That was 7 years later, Johnny.
Yes, yeah.
Wow. You're listening to This Is Your Journey. It's thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Well, boxing is about to enter Johnny Lewis's life. That's next.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, it's great to have your company on This Is Your Journey, made possible by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. We're chatting to world-renowned boxing trainer Johnny Lewis. So, Johnny, tell us about the Newtown Police Boys Club and the special place, I'm sure, that it holds in your life.
Oh, look, it played a massive part in my life. It used to be 8 years to 18 years. And the sergeant up there, my brother was 8, and he let me come in, but the only thing he let me do was play ping pong, you know. And when I was 8, you know, you could do anything you wanted to do. But I remember would have been about 11, and we used to go up there, and do different things. And some nights we'd go up and have a spa, and we might go once a week or twice a week, and with no intentions of boxing. And it was about 13, 14 that I started to go past Snowy Robbins gym down Erskineville and have a look there, and then started to, I was doing the boxing as well as playing a bit of football, and I virtually, from that point on, I've been involved with boxing.
So I think you started training in there as a 13-year-old. Now, was that to keep fit for league, or were you really diving right into the sport at that stage?
Oh, look, I just, it was just like, I'd have to say that football was meant more to me, but month went past, I really started to love the sport of boxing. Yeah, I loved it.
And I wanted to ask you about some of the coaches of the time, Snowy McFadden, I think Dick O'Connor, and probably countless others I'm not going to mention, but that amateur boxing roadshow, if you like, it took you all over the place. Orange, Cowra, Singleton. Are these some of the most fond memories that you've got of pulling the gloves on yourself?
Look, that was one of the big things when, we'd be up training and someone would say, oh, you can put your name down to go to Griffith. And, we had like a mini bus sort of thing. And to go away was like, we didn't ever go on holidays or anything like that, but all of a sudden, like going to Griffith and Orange and down the south coast, and went to little places like Captain's Flat and that around Canberra, it was a big deal for us. And we got billeted out or stayed in hotels and had some good meals, and We put our names down pretty much as quick as we could. And, so that was from about 13 when I was doing that, yes.
And how did you go, Johnny, from boxing to boxing coach initially? I mean, was that by design or was it by accident?
Oh, certainly by accident. Dick O'Connor was our trainer, and he left and he said, I'll be back in 5 weeks. You keep your eye on them because we've got a good team here, and keep them training because we've got a real good team, and we'll have a good year, and so be it. But the 5 weeks went, Dick never came, and then the 5 weeks were 5 months, and it finished up that it was December, and the young understudy that was with the club said they got wrapped over the knuckles because we hadn't been to one boxing event in that calendar period. And he said, we've got to go to Parramatta. It's the last one of the year. We must be up there. And I said, oh, good. I said, he's going to be in our corner. And he said, you and me. I said, oh, I can't do that. And he said, well, I'm going to get in with you, and I can't do it. So anyhow, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was we had 5 kids, or it could have even been 7, but every one of them won. And I remember talking to the sergeant coming home in the bus. He said, we're going to keep this going over this holiday, and you'll look after them from January next year. And that's how it came about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're only 17 at this stage, Johnny. So had you got the bug by this point? Was it love at first sight?
No, yeah, I liked it. And I knew that, it was only a couple of, it's certainly, I'm wise enough to know that I would be better outside than inside. And so God was looking after me in that aspect.
Bit safer on the other side of the ropes too, of course.
Yeah, it's safe, but, you got to make sure that you don't get too brave and let the kids get beaten up. Yeah, always, they are the ones that count, the ones that matter.
Yeah, and there's a responsibility with that, of course, which I'm sure you would have been aware of. So, Johnny, what did you come to look for in a fighter? I mean, what if I was to ask you what, the one or one of the non-negotiables are, what would you say?
Look, when you know, these kids are young, and as I say, I wasn't much older than them really. And when they were turning up every night on time, you knew that you had something to work with. And then some would reach a standard very early, others a little bit longer, but you know, they all contributed to each other. Like, you know, we kept the sparring in house. We didn't go to other gyms. We always done it there. But that's how I got into it anyhow, to the fullest.
Yeah. So I guess those characteristics, you know, discipline, focus. And for all the success stories that you've had, and we'll get to them later in the individuals, I mean, how many, have you lost count, Johnny, the amount of, I guess, fighters that you've seen that might have the skill, but not the desire?
Yeah, there's, you know, you're hard to rattle them off, but I've seen where, you know, there's been fighters that with discipline, they would have stood tall, and, but they didn't want it as much as they should have, or they didn't want to work together, you know. And they might look back one day and say, God, if only I would have done this, I could have done that. And there's been blokes that have been a bit unlucky and getting bad decisions, and and it spoiled their careers to the point where they just automatically give it away and so forth.
You're with This Is Your Journey. It's brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You can find them online at tobinbrothers.com.au. We'll be right back with Johnny Lewis after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, we hope you're enjoying this week's edition of This Is Your Journey. We're with revered boxing trainer Johnny Lewis. Johnny, 1981, and a young rugby league player named Jeff Fenwick arrives at the gym for some fitness and some fitness work. What happens next?
Well, I had a kid that was fighting up there that had had a few years under his belt. And young kid was just sitting down on the seat watching, and never said nothing. And I just happened to say, mate, we've got to try and get someone to spar us. We need some sparring. And this kid said, I'll spar him. And I said, oh, mate, we don't work that way. You got to do a bit of training, and you know, then you can get in and have a spar when you get a little bit of knowledge and everything like that. Anyhow, I said, mate, if you want to come up tomorrow, be here at 5 o'clock or whatever. I got there a little bit early, and here's this kid waiting down with his bag, and that was young Jeff Bennett. And it was amazing how, like, 81, he's come up, never had a fight. 82, 83, Australian eminent champion. 84, he's the captain of the Australian Olympics. Got horribly robbed in a fight that would have seen him go into the final and fight Steve McCrory, who he finished up stopping after that. But it just, you couldn't believe. And when he won that title, the world title, the Japanese were very cranky of the stoppage by the referee. But he done a good job by stopping it. And in a couple of months, we fought him again, and Jeff knocked him out in a couple of rounds. It just showed how quickly he was improving. But I always quote Jack Gibson as, you only take out what you put in, and nobody put in as much or as hard as Jeff Fenwick did.
Yeah. Well, what was it like being in the corner for Jeff? I mean, how big was his heart?
Oh, like a lion. He was tough and he was game. He had fighter written all over him, Jeff, you know. It was a wonderful period in my life to just watch this kid, how much he wanted it, how much he forsook to do it. His discipline was paramount, and he just knew what he wanted, and very young and in the sport at that time, but he just raced to the top quicker than anyone I've ever seen.
As we know, Jeff doesn't possess a one-punch knockout, but he does wear boxers down.
He's hitting him here with enough to wear a brick wall down.
I think they're going to have to watch Samat's head. Samat's getting very free with the head.
But oh, Payakaroon just standing there and letting Fedek hit him.
Well, the only thing that's getting Jeff Fenech tired is throwing punches.
Another warning there to Fenech to stop pushing. He's hitting Payakaroon at will now. The tie, the Thai boxer is down. He's out. He's finished. It's over. Fenech is the winner. Fenech is the world champion. Payakaroon is finished.
Jeff Fenech.
So three times a world champion in three weight divisions, the bantamweight, super bantamweight, and the featherweight. Now, he came back, didn't he, as a super featherweight after that featherweight title. Now, I wanted to take you, Johnny, to 1991, and it's his first meeting with Azuma Nelson. Now, the highlights we could go on about forever, but I wanted to ask you about this fight at Caesars Palace in Vegas against Azuma. What are your memories of it? I'm assuming, you know, remembering it was one of the low lights for him and for you, when just about everyone present, I think including even Mike Tyson, who was fighting on the night, thought he'd been robbed.
Oh, look, he was robbed blatantly, and it, you know, it could have been worse. They could have given him, they made it a draw conveniently, but they could have been or more so, and made out that Azuma had won it.
12 rounds of boxing, we have a split decision, and here are the score totals. Judge at ringside, Jerry Roth, scores the bout 115-113 for Jeff Fenech. Judge at ringside, Miguel Donate, scores the bout 116-112, Azuma Nelson. And judge at ringside, Dave Moretti, scores the bout 114-114. A draw. The decision is even a draw.
Oh, goodness. That is mind-boggling. And look at the reaction by Jeff Fenech. He is in total disbelief. No way, he says. It's a draw.
Yeah, it was very hard to take, because I knew that there was no one that could on earth that could beat him at that nine stone, and then I'd be fighting at the 9-4 weight and win that. I was very confident that we'd win the second one as well, but it wasn't to be.
Jeff Harding, I wanted to ask you about. Geez, he was a rugged fighter. So he won the WBC light heavyweight title with that 12th round TKO against a man we spoke about earlier, Dennis Andreese. And I think it was only his 15th professional fight. Now, that belt for Jeff came and went a couple of times. But this first one against Dennis, before the 12th round, I think he was behind on all three judges' cards, Johnny. He was bleeding around both eyes. I think he had a busted nose. Yet, what did you say to him before he went out in the 12th round?
Well, you know, in the 9th and 10th round, Andre, every time Jeff hit him underneath, he'd grunt, and they were hurting him. And Jeff was a very good puncher with the hooking and the ripping to the body. And he came home so, so good. And I remember I got him up off the stool, I said, go out and come back champion of the world. You've got him. And he went out there, two knockdowns, and he couldn't go down again because Jeff was hitting him so many punches, keeping him up. But the referee wisely jumped in between them and called the fight off, and Jeff Harding was WBC light heavyweight.
He doesn't seem to have a lot underneath him. If Jeff Harding could put together a series... Oh, there it is! The combination of Andre's is down. There is no Chris Andre says I'm fine.
So, Johnny, at moments like this, as trainer, as coach, as mentor and all those things, do you feel the pressure to say the right thing at the right time, or did it just come naturally?
Oh, I think naturally. And one thing you got to do is to realise that everyone's an individual, and what works for Jeff Fenwick doesn't mean it's going to work for a Justin Rousell or Gary Sinclair, and everyone's an individual, and you pick up things when you're doing the pads with them, and you're real hands on with them with the pads. I really like working with them with the pads.
Mm. You met Kostyuzu in Russia. You were coaching the Australian amateur team at the World Championships in Moscow. But Johnny, how did it come to be that Kostya would move to Australia permanently to train under you?
We've seen Kostya fight. He got beat by a East German boxer, but I was taken back with Kostya. There's just something, about him. And anyhow, I spoke to the doctor over there because Kostya didn't speak English. I spoke to him and said, gee, I'd like to take him to Australia and blah, blah, blah. And anyhow, I went to a few more, to Indonesia and to Thailand, where they had King's Cups and President's Cups. And it was there that I spoke to Kostya, and the doctor could speak English. I was just talking to Kostya, and he seemed to be interested. And then when Kostya came here, I forget what year it was, maybe 1991 or something, that to the World Amateur Championship held in Australia, Bill Morty and myself went and met him after the fight where he won, and we took him to Doyle's on the water there at Watson's Bay, and anyhow, Bill was talking to him, and anyhow, he agreed to come back, do his boxing out of Australia. So it was a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, what did you see in him, Johnny, in those really early days then?
It wasn't his punching power, but it just, I don't know, I just looked at him, and as I said, he got beat. Sort of said, I'd rather have the loser than the winner. And, he finished up in Thailand. He beat the East German bloke. Yeah, beat him well.
He'd become WBC, WBA, IBF champion, an absolute great of the sport in this country. You did mention, I think, in your biography, Johnny, that there might have been a rift between you two at the end. Can you let us in on what might have happened there?
I think what happened was when the bust up with Morty came, I felt really bad. I stayed with Kostya because I felt that, I played a big part in talking him into coming here. And we had a lot more progress to make. And I honestly thought that no one would do the job as good as Morty did. And we could rekindle it all again. But that didn't work. I did stay with Kostya. But there was a few little things that went down. And I like trust. But what happened to Bill, it really hurt me. And unfortunately, we never ever spoke again, I had a lot of admiration for Bill. Yeah, as I say, it was always in the back of my mind that, it should never have happened or whatever. But anyhow, things happen. Yeah, you go with whatever you think, but that's what I did.
Nice right hand in this round was Kostya Zeus, clearly evening things up.
And ending strong. Down he goes. A right hand. He's in trouble.
He's in real trouble.
Upstairs, and it's over just like that. Unbelievable.
just coming back to his qualities in the ring, I think it's been said that Kostya was as good a reader of a fight as anybody, Johnny, that he could see the way a fight was unfolding and he had a great ability to read the moment and seize the moment.
Yeah, I remember a couple of fights that was pretty hectic and it was seesawing and whatever. And I remember Kostya come back and he'd say, "Don't worry, I've got him now, I've got him." And he did. And he could position him for whatever punch he wanted to fight. Wonderful reader of the fight, Kostya.
We're talking to Johnny Lewis on This Is Your Journey. It's thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Live. Stay with us. We'll be back with Johnny right after this.
You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. You're listening to This Is Your Journey with Sam Edmund. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
It's been great to have your company here on This Is Your Journey. It's thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. The great Johnny Lewis has been our guest today. Johnny, some of the things that became habitual for you as a trainer over the years, I think you would tape a white cross on each of your fighters' wrists, you know, one for your own fighter and one for his opponent in the ring. Why did you do that?
Oh, you know, just I can't say I'm over with religion, but it was my little thing of cross that both two combatants would be all right at the end of the fight. And although we wanted to win by knockout at the count of 11, we'd like to see him up and saying, "Where did that come from?" or whatever. We certainly don't go in there to see people seriously injured and, becoming a fatality of things, you know. But I just did that. I had a little bit of... I just felt that it would serve them well, and I always did it. And I look back on it. If it did work, that's terrific, because we were never left out seeing someone very badly battered. It was not to be like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned earlier how much you enjoyed, you know, working with the pads, you know, with your guys. You went to Thailand in your early 20s. Now, I think this is where you really struck a chord with you, didn't it? That the speed that the Thai boxers had with pads, and I think at this point, educate us, but back in your gym at Newtown, you know, target pads weren't really seen in Australia prior to that. It was all about using larger gloves as the target, wasn't it?
Yeah, we used to do punching with the cage, and he'd put on the big 16-ounce gloves, and we'd hit it into that, or they'd get you on the bag and hold the bag and run you through your punches and your combinations like that. I brought back, they were more like baseball pitcher's glove, and yeah, I was sort of doing it on that. And then as we went along, they changed shape a little bit. And I think they're very, very important in training, the pads. I do.
And I don't know if there was the same message every time, but was there a departing, you know, right before you send your fighter out there, was there a departing word or words that were spoken? Did you get into the routine of delivering the same message every time?
No, I don't think it would be the same. As I said earlier, everyone's an individual, and if there was something I thought, you know, the last thing walking down the aisle or to the corner or before the first round, I'd say it, but very much I believed. I can't remember what I said, but
yeah,
And if they have your trust, you're lucky.
Yeah, well, just on the trust, I was reading this week that you would often say or tell your fighters that you love them, that I love you, before sending them out for the next round. Now, was that part of building? You know, you were looking for that trust.
Look, I think, like, if they know that, look, I never ever trained anybody that I didn't want to. I really cared for whoever I had, and I did love them. I wouldn't train them if I didn't love them, you know. And I I love the respect that they gave me at all times. And as I said, you shared with them in the victories and you shared with them in the spoils. But, I always loved my fighters, always.
And the psychological stuff, Johnny, I mean, how much attention did you pay to that? I think it was said that you would often push your fighter to the middle of the ring before the round began to almost show a quick recovery and a high work rate to just strike, you know, not a demoralising blow, of course, but just that seed of doubt that my guy's ready, we're ready every time, we're ready first.
Yeah, I think particularly with Jeff Fenwick, like Jeff was a very big fighter and he would, if the bloke's there after the halfway mark and or you'd see him go back very tired in the legs and they'd plop down in the seat and I'd get Jeff up long before they'd say seconds out and have it. The bloke would look over and say, geez, here he comes again, like, you know, and he'd fall a little bit with the mental strength that, God, you know, like, here he comes. He looks like he hasn't done a round yet. And he's been belting me for five or six of them. And, but as I said, individually, you couldn't do that with everyone. But I like to get them up and let them all see that our blokes are trained hard and they could do that.
Couple of things you had close by, I think, for every fight, Johnny. Peppermint oil for your guys to sniff, you know, before and during the fight. And then I want to know about the personal solution with the Fry's balsam for the cuts.
That was all in the early days. But the rule now is that you only have adrenaline 1/1000, and that's all you use now. You can't have anything else. But there used to be Caladian and Fry's balsam and a lot of little things like that, but adrenaline 1/1000 works and it can run into your eyes and not hurt you, and so that was a good rule by the officials in the sport.
Where's boxing at now, Johnny, as you look at it? I mean, you know, the emergence of UFC, MMA as a whole and things like that. I mean, how big of a threat is this sort of stuff to the sport of boxing, do you think?
A big threat. I don't say a threat, but it's a sport. And for all, like, the viciousness of it, you don't see anyone getting too hurt. Like, they get chewed up like they've been in a mincer or something, but a lot of blood and so forth. But it's their decision to do that, the kickboxing and whatever, jiu-jitsu, whatever, karate. But I still think that boxing will always be the sweet science. You know, there's, as I said, it's very close to a game of chess when you're out there in a fight. If you do it that way and as I said, Costa could play chess, and he could do that to win a fight too.
Are we in good hands with the current and the next generation of fighters in this country, do you think?
I think there's some very good young talent out there at the moment. Yeah, I do, and I know there's various promoters doing the work, but I think that we're very fortunate. In New South Wales, I think the Rose boys do a tremendous job, and Brian Armitrader down in Melbourne, he's very conscious of putting on good fights. So we work around them, and good things are happening.
And I should, before I let you go, Johnny, I mean, how are you filling your days at the moment, your relationship with the sport now? What does it all look like for you?
Yeah, well, I didn't ever retire from it, but I virtually did. But I was fortunate that I saw young Harry Garside in his Olympic fight. Peter Matreski Jr. asked me would I train him, he'd signed him up. And I said, no, mate, I won't. And I said, mate, I'm finished. Anyhow, then he said to me, oh, will you come and meet him? I said, yeah, I can do that. Anyhow, we met at Erskineville. I sat down with him, and about 2.5 minutes' time, I knew that I wanted to work with this kid. He just captivated me, and he's a wonderful kid, really wonderful. And, well, yeah, we've had three now, and he's won them all, and he's improving, and I think that Harry can go all the way. I really do.
Yeah, right. 2.5 minutes. Geez, he worked you out quick.
he played me off the break, he did. Yep.
Beautifully done. Well, let's hope we see more of it in the ring in the years to come. Johnny, hey, thanks so much for joining us today. You obviously developed a sharp eye for talent, but an even greater ability to harness that talent. As we said off the top, you're a winner, but you made other people around you winners as well, and I'm not sure there's a better legacy for a coach. So well done on everything you've achieved, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thank you for joining us also. You've been listening to This Is Your Journey for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. You can jump online and find them at tobinbrothers.com.au, and we'll catch you the next time we celebrate another great sporting journey.